Hello. Welcome to the No Good Poetry Podcast. Each week, we talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of poetry. This is episode 6.
With
Joseph Bienvenue and
Joseph Makos. This is the good, bad, and the ugly, isn't it? Some ugly shit out there, kids. Let's make the world safer for poetry.
Oh, we're recording all this.
Are we recording?
Just right now, just started. One, literally, 5 seconds ago.
Okay, so no gossip.
We don't even have that name on the record.
Just stop.
Just stop gossiping.
Okay.
Because we could gossip for days. This is how Bill and I organize a poetry fest. It's 50, like, well, about like 80% organization, 20% gossip.
Well, that's...
Or maybe like 70%,
60%. Well...
30%. So... Second annual New Orleans Poetry Festival happened.
Yes, it did.
It did, right? And we're here with the founders of the festival to talk about it.
To talk about New Orleans Poetry Festival.
Yay.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We could say their names.
Yep.
That might be helpful.
This is Susan Larson. This is not.
No, it's fine. It's not. That's not what we're trying to do here.
So, we're here with Megan Burns and Bill Lavender.
Hi, Josephs.
So, we all convened a couple weekends ago, right, at the Healing Center on St. Claude.
Yes.
And we brought a bunch of people together.
We did.
Brought a bunch of
it was amazing.
Poets and writers and people who have traveled quite far, actually, and... A lot of press is represented, and this year the small press fair was amped up, and the class schedules were amped up, and there was so many readings going on, and a well-balanced diet of poetry for the weekend. How do you feel about that?
I feel very good about it.
Well, before we say anything else, and you know... some of our listeners are not from New Orleans, and they have no idea what the New Orleans Poetry Festival is.
Okay.
What's the idea behind it? How is it different from other poetry festivals out there?
So, Bill took me to AWP one year, the only time I've ever been, and the only thing I liked about AWP was the off-site readings and seeing all the poets. So, when I came back to New Orleans, I said, let's do just that. I just want to hear poetry, and I want to be with all my poets. And the book fair is cool, too, at AWP. So we took that idea, too. So we took all the cool stuff, and we put it in New Orleans, which makes it double cool, because it's New Orleans. And there you go. Poetry Festival.
And so we've had this... there is a certain conflict. I mean, it's a poetry, New Orleans Poetry Festival, not a New Orleans Poetry Conference. And we've struggled with... that designation is what are we going to call it? Well, we never struggled with what we were going to call it, but we struggled with the model as to how, you know, to set it up, how to fund it, how to make it work. And it's very interesting. So it's structured now basically like a conference, in that the people who participate pay participation fees. They're very low compared to other conferences around the country, but still, it's like participant funded. And this is what we're struggling with, is how to make it not participant funded.
Yeah.
But to make
it
into a festival, meaning that it's an event for, you know, the public to come to, as well as, you know, for poets to commune.
Right.
I mean, I think what makes it different from a conference, though, too, even though we have scholarly panels, is that there's such a So much of the festival is just the poetry readings, though. So yeah. You don't just have panels. And then we did, this year for the first time, we did the lunch, where everyone convened in the theater and had lunch together, which is one of my favorite things. So you have this community aspect, which you don't get at a giant conference. So everyone's like in this one room, we're all eating lunch together, and then we're all going to listen to poetry together. And that's more celebratory than sitting in a conference room listening to a panel.
People listening to readings that I don't think would have gone.
That they wouldn't have normally maybe, yeah, and heard. And yeah. They were great. They're amazing.
Yeah, that was one of the ideas that we came up with to try and make it more of a festival and less of a conference. But on the other hand, in doing our post-festival survey, we're actually finding that people want a little more academic content.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like they want both. Okay, they want it to be
That's
a festival.
Great news.
But they want this kind of academic content also, and they wanted a little more of that. So it's like we're, at this point anyway, in reviewing the evaluations that we did to inform us of how everybody felt about everything, and also, I mean, we have to do this for the grants that we get and things like that, but... So I see it now as this kind of balancing act to make it something where poets can come and sort of talk about the nuts and bolts of the trade, which we might call academic, but also a place where people from the general public can come, have fun, go to readings, meet interesting people, buy interesting books, and so that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to go both directions at once.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a. I just as you were sort of talking about like that direction, I just kept thinking, where's the nicest and most accommodating boutique hotel in the city where you could just rent basically the hotel out, Because then you could have all that in one. You could take it into a space where it's like hotel and accommodations.
The Healing Center worked really great as a space.
I think I have to say that. Well, I'll tell you this from the survey, that of the logistical things that we put in there, and we said rate them.
Yeah,
the venue was through the roof.
Oh, great!
People loved it.
Oh, that's great.
It had a poet feel to it. I think
I thought it was pretty much perfect.
It
really did. Yeah.
Well, it's very open, which is nice. I think, like, as far as all, I mean, yeah, things are in their own little rooms, but it doesn't feel like where I feel like.
Well, I think people felt like they were at something, but they were also getting a taste of New Orleans because of all the little shops.
Oh, yeah,
and they could go to the Spotted Cat and eat, and they could, go to a little grocery store. It was like they didn't have to leave the premises to also kind of do some shopping, and get some voodoo stuff. And Sally Ann did great, apparently. And, it was kind of like they got the best of both worlds.
Nice.
Yeah, we don't see any reason to move it.
Okay.
We really like the venue at this point. And hotels are convenient, but they're expensive for one thing, and they are they're also, kind of sterile
and bland.
They always have this kind of capitalist feel to them, So
and you know what I like that in the Healing Center you have like kind of a communal space.
Mm-hmm.
That I thought that was kind of nice. That all right, the book fair opens up right onto the open mic part, and like there's no wall separating all those things. Where I think like conferences.
Well, if we did it in a hotel, you'd only be getting hotel guests coming through there. Whereas the Healing Center is a community space that people walk through all the time. So they were just walking right into the book fair.
Yeah,
there was a ton of people that walked in and were just like, they were going to yoga, they were going to go whatever they do there.
And they were like,
what is this? What's going on?
Yeah, and I actually felt that those people were extremely engaging.
Mm-hmm.
I thought like a lot of them were like very like, I just would say hello to everybody and, hey, how are you?
What's
are you just walking through the healing? Yeah, just here. This is great. Just walking through,
Yeah. And that was the goal. I mean, we wanted the small presses to just be able to be exposed to people, not necessarily just the people paying to be there, because we know those are other poets. That's who you sell to all the time, is other poets. But just the foot traffic of people just going to the bank, going to yoga, and they're kind of like, what is this? I'm going to pick this up and look at this book. And our small presses said they did well at the fair, which is, you know, yay. Then we succeeded.
Yeah, it was the venue is pretty much a win-win. The vendors that live in the venue permanently, they were all happy with it.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, really?
It was a boon. They all did well.
Yeah.
Because people stayed. People were on site wanting to go to everything because we had so much. They didn't want to leave the site, so they were shopping.
That,
and they were going.
That barbershop was blowing up.
They were getting their hair cut. They were doing all kinds of stuff.
That barbershop was very active.
I know.
It was awesome. Yeah. I just remember, like, just, like, walking through and being like, wait.
It's an all-in-one stop. You can come to a poetry fest, get a haircut, do your banking, go grocery shopping.
Sure.
Have some drinks, hear more poetry, do some yoga. So you never have to leave.
Buy some clothes.
You never have to leave.
Some clothes,
get some voodoo candles, pray at your altar. You never have to leave.
Wow.
So what were the highlights of the festival this year, Tiel?
The small press fair was awesome. It was so cool. Like, you just, I don't know. We set it up, and then it was like, wow, we're doing this. It's like a fair.
I felt the one thing about the small press fair that I really liked was that it seemed like we really used the space well. There was a good flow, you know? And you created this, like how people kind of, like, walked in and perused the fair. I thought you could, like, kind of make it, you know, we could add a few more presses, I think, you know, maybe a couple more. At the most, but we could really fill it out.
Mm-hmm. I think people just like the social area.
I think we have room to do several more. Yeah. Like I think we had, I believe it was 22 tables this year.
Okay.
And
22
I feel like
tables.
We could handle 30.
I think so.
Even 35 with a little bit of reconfiguration that we've already considered. But, you know, I mean, the interesting thing about the small press fair was that we had to lay it out in 5 minutes. Because I had very carefully, I'd spent a month laying out the space. They went there and carefully measured it, drew the floor plan to scale.
And then they delivered the wrong tables.
And put the tables in, and then they delivered us 8-foot tables instead of 6-foot tables with no warning.
No warning.
So we had to redo the layout literally with 5 minutes notice. So that was an unfortunate aspect of it this year. I mean, it would have been laid out a lot better. I mean, the way I had it, it was actually better because there was some disappointment with
how the tables were behind the stairwell there.
Yeah.
But we're just not going to make it any sense to anybody who hasn't seen it. But the other thing that you're talking about highlights, but I'll talk about lowlights a little bit. The open mic stage was
a bust.
Well, I mean, there were a couple things that they weren't exactly a bust, but we realized that we need to, you know, I mean, next year we're going to adjust them and we're going to make them better. And the open mic situation didn't, you know, that never took off. And so we're gonna reconfigure that for next year.
Yeah,
I mean,
make it even better.
Part of that, I guess, is because it seemed kind of separated from where people were for the most part. So I think, you know, I don't know.
I think it was unstructured. So we were hoping people would just step up, which always, you know, people are timid and they don't want to necessarily step up. It was a little quieter back there because there weren't as many tables back there. So if we had more tables and more foot traffic back there, that would change it. And I think there's so many events going on. We have 4 events going on at once and people have paid to come and they've already made their schedules of all the events they want to hit. So spending time at the open mic stage, I don't think was really clocked into a lot of people's to-do list. Yeah. So it's hard to get an audience to even kind of sit there and listen.
There were several very interesting moments actually at the open mic stage. As there often are.
I read.
But, and I did too.
Yeah,
and,
I mean.
You know, and it was, and when I was doing it, it was fun, but then there was a lot of time when it just was vacant, when it just wasn't being used. So, I mean, what we're thinking is that we want to just organize that a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that,
sure. Yeah.
Maybe there's an open mic session and when there aren't a bunch of concurrent sessions or
something.
Yeah. And also there, I don't know. I would even be like, you know, the open mic stage could be exploited in some cool ways. We could we could do a thing. I have an idea where we could take we could be playing if there's times in like blocks of time in the open mic where we could just like, we could conceivably have a projector up there and be projecting like something like a visual poetry thing.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if there's just like a visual poetry background, you know?
I mean, I think one of the interesting things that people said,
art piece that came through, you know, people read in front of it.
I mean, people said in the evaluation that they wanted more time to socialize, you know, because poets are such social creatures. They do. I mean, we pack the schedule with stuff that you can do back to back all day long, but people really do like to have that time, that downtime to just kind of like hang out at the book fair and like talk to people and socialize. And I think that.
So what ended up happening, I think, is that people would go to one session and then like skip the next one to like, you know,
have time
socialize. Then go to one after that.
Okay.
It's not the worst. It's just that you have to build the festival around the creatures that come, and poets are these certain creatures that just can't sit in rooms for very long, and they need to like talk to people and hang out.
But if you got another 100 people through the door.
It's true.
Which you have 250 people, and then all of a sudden it's like you have more people going through the space and more people, more people like, then more classes will fill up with more, you know. So
that's true. It might have worked better had it reached the critical mass.
Mm-hmm. 50 or 100 more people. Mm-hmm. 50 more people.
Mm-hmm. Which I think next year I think we're going to easily have that just from anecdotal reports.
Well, if this year is indicative of next year, we didn't double in size from the first year. We like tripled almost.
Yeah.
I would say tripled, but also kind of like the book fair was like a real thing, like its own.
Oh yeah,
its own,
I think
its own head
of
the Hydra of poetry festival.
The people that were just kind of coming through, seeing the book fair, some seeing the readings, you know, that weren't necessarily, officially attending the festival.
Well, word on the street, and by the street I mean social media, is that the word is going around that it's better than AWP for poets. So I feel like everyone went home and they told their friends, and like all of those friends, there's going to be like 10 people that come for every one person that went back home and was like, "You need to do this. You need to do this."
Specifically told us that they were like, "Oh, this is so much better than AWP." Like,
yeah,
it's like,
well,
content's just as good, and it's actually laid back and fun.
Well, it's like built for poets, you know, by poets.
Yeah, I don't think that that's a good thing to compare yourself to begin with.
Well,
no, but I think so many poets get sucked into that model. It's like they go to graduate school, they get their MFA, they get sucked into the model of where do you go? You got to go to AWP. That's where you go if you're a writer. And it's like, if you're a poet, really?
The character of the poetry landscape.
Really? If you're a poet, you don't need to be at AWP. You don't need to do that. Stop falling for that. AWP wasn't made for you.
No.
It wasn't made for poets. It's they're capitalizing on the fact that poets do offsite readings, and that's why we go there. Stop making them money. That says instead of AWP.
Oh my God, the outquotes will be better than AWP.
You're right.
Five stars. 5.5 stars. Exactly. Like rated like.
Exactly. We may do a table at AWP too.
Oh shit. So the poetry festival does a table at AWP.
Alright, so Bill just kind of sidestepped telling us highlights all together.
He's
so we gotta get back to him again.
Okay.
Well, you know, the whole thing was a highlight. I'll tell you the stuff that was reviewed well on the evaluation form that about 40% of participants filled out. So I don't know if that's statistically significant or not, but the small press fair was like the venue and the small press fair, those things were perfect. Nobody had a bad word to say about them. Everybody loved it. So, to my mind, we're going to build on the small press fair and orbit around that. And then the concurrent panels and readings, just the basic daily, hourly schedule of stuff that all got basically rave reviews also.
Awesome.
So, so those are the things that I think are going to remain the same or be amped up in one way or another for next year.
Great.
Did you have any personal favorite moments, favorite things?
I enjoyed the maple leaf reading a lot.
I did too.
More this year.
Megan and I.
It was really long though. It's like a marathon reading at the end, and by the end you're just delirious. You're like, whoa, poetry's gonna kill me.
Wow.
I've given my life to you, poetry, and what have you given me?
You're just covered in a wash of language, just like flustering over you. You're just like,
where are we now?
You know, yeah.
It's intense though. Yeah, everyone wants to read, and it goes on for hours, and it's super because it's an open mic. It's like you hear all kind of different stuff.
Did you achieve the, like the synesthesia of words popping out into the atmosphere? Like,
I definitely like in the second to last reader turned to the audience several times and said, "What is happening?" Because I was delirious.
What is happening?
What is happening? I was confused.
Where is
what is happening? I need to go home and lay down. Wow.
Yeah, you got blissed out with poetry.
Yeah, we went home after that, and immediately, like, I was being dropped off by...
I know the story.
He's someone I won't name, and Martin Barrera Matos was in the car with us, and the driver was going to take him along. But anyway, we had a wreck. Right in front of my house, this guy, she pulled in to drop me off, and this guy just backed up into her and smashed the front of her car. And it turned into this whole big scene, and I was so not wanting to deal with that. You know, I mean, this was like the final moment of this like huge undertaking, and it was like this the time I was going to go home and collapse. You know, and I had to deal with that for about an hour. But I came up with this brilliant idea to take a video statement of what happened in the wreck, and then I gave it to the driver, and I'll see you later.
There's so much more to that story I need to share with you.
Yeah.
In another time.
Yeah.
In another place.
In another episode, perhaps.
Somehow, I don't think
poets
that's
lives.
Made it into an
called
episode.
Poets lives.
Yeah.
Being poets.
Lives of the poets.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, and that was fun having the party here too. At
I have no idea
Joseph's
what you're
studio.
Talking about.
No, you don't want that to be
spliced.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, we never talked to after parties. That's secret.
Yeah.
I have no idea what
y'all
are
talking about. What they're
talking
about is the after party here at the NOLA DNA studios. It was,
you should splice that, though, because people will not.
Really killer.
It's secret.
It was
it's secret.
Party.
It was so secret. I mean,
that
we
was
were
Saturday
handing
night.
Cards out at the table.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I have one around here somewhere.
But that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was just nice to have everyone over and just play for a night, you know? And just get, you know, we had Jeff here playing on his little weird, you know, touchpad sampling
sampler.
And stuff, sampler, and, you know, everyone read a little bit. It was, like, kind of drizzling, wasn't it? Kind of drizzling?
It was raining. It was so romantic.
Yeah,
it was like a poem. It was like a poem. There's poets outside in the middle of the street,
oh,
New
yeah,
Orleans
and
in the rain.
Like,
reading in Spanish and English,
spontaneous
yeah. Spanish.
Yeah.
Collaboration on
yeah.
Your porch.
It was. I have all the, I don't want to walk away from the mic right now, but I have them. They're just within several feet of your elbow. But I have all the crazy cut-ups and the weird twisted ones
yeah.
that I did.
Cut-ups
hold on
that
a
were
second.
Made. There were some spontaneous cut-ups going on.
Yeah, I started that because,
okay.
I really needed something to do with my hands. Oh, he still has
so look.
The
this
cut
is
up
how
piece.
Crazy.
Yeah,
I have all the cut-up pieces still.
after you did the cut-ups, because no one can hear Magos right now, and no one's telling you this, he took them and ran them through the machine and distorted them some more and gave them a...
Okay, so I still have a couple of these ones.
Yeah, that's
the right? one that I did. That was the one that we did. Uh-huh. And then I took it and I did, like, look at these.
Are you doing a really podcast still?
It's always a great thing on a podcast to have
visuals.
It's a visual poetry on a podcast.
We'll show it. We'll show
that's
it.
Great.
We'll show it.
Yeah.
We'll
yeah,
show
that's
it.
Right.
We'll show it in the end notes.
You can put this up. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's indicative of what the best thing is about being a poet. Like, that's the point of the whole gig, right? Is like... the community and just like hanging out. Like normal people go to parties and what do they do? I don't even know what normal people do at parties if they're normal.
Yeah,
but poets at parties, I know what we do, and we read poems and make art and then someone is on the floor. Which that last part might be every party. But the first two things
getting,
are definitely
getting,
a poet
gig
thing.
Wine, getting a glass of wine poured down their throat. You know, like, or whatever, you know? I don't know. I think it's you put your, you know, you put it. I think the thing that I liked about Poetry Festival is that, you know, I was able to travel in that weekend through several different contexts of what poetry meant to me. And so I'll go through and it's just like a little bit of this and a little bit of workshop and recording people and talking to poets and engaging with people about poetry. A poetry game, we just explain a game that we make, that we poetry game that we make, and then telling other people about other presses and interacting with poets like through their poetry, but through conversations, through languages that you don't even know, just experiencing like what people are saying. And then the readings, of course, which is like, of course, like all these poets from different worlds and of corners of New Orleans and stuff. And that's, you know,
I mean, I should probably say, so, I mean, coming from Naropa and doing their summer writing program, that's probably where I bring my inspiration for doing the Poetry Fest, because the summer writing program at Naropa is like from the morning all the way through the evening, you're just saturated. You're like hearing panels and you're talking about poetics and then you're listening to poetry and then you're doing a workshop and then you're having lunch with the same people that you're
sure.
with this same program. And so it's, and that's the point of it. They'll tell you like the point of this is to just be saturated to the point where you're just like, you can't even write anymore because you're just like filled. Your brain is just filled with all this stuff and you're meeting all these people that you collaborate with and, you know, and networking with. And then you hopefully you go back to wherever you go and you start working and printing and publishing each other. And that's what I wanted the Poetry Fest to be, but for New Orleans.
One of the things I thought was great was it seemed like there were a lot more presses from out of town this year. And I think that was nice. I think everyone got to see like, oh, wait, there's other people doing the same thing in other places.
Yeah, that's what I told people. I said, if you're a poet, you need to come to the small press fair because these are the people that publish you.
Yeah.
These are the people that make the chapbooks and the books and the magazines that are going to publish you. And that's your job as a poet.
Yeah.
To go and support those presses.
Well, and it also, like, I think some, I mean, like, you were talking about AWP and poets feeling like that's their only place to go. And that's part of the problem, right? Because, well, in reality, that's for a very small amount of people, and it's a very narrow spectrum of what poetry
is. It was created for graduate schools, you
yeah.
know, for people that go to graduate school. The Poetry Festival is not... You know, it's not for that. We're not creating something for people who just go to graduate schools and get MFAs.
Exactly.
It's for anybody.
In fact, we're, you know, opposed to that.
We are opposed to MFAs.
At least at a certain level. I mean, AWP is Associated Writing Programs. You know, this doesn't have anything to do with writing programs.
But I mean, MFA or not, I think even for a lot of people who get MFAs, right, that doesn't mean academic world of poetry is a place for them. Right.
No, true. I guess what I'm saying is I want the Poetry Fest to be available to both, and that's what Bill was saying in the beginning, that balance of, you know, the scholarly, but also the street poetics, you know, the person that didn't go to any schooling at all, you know, and they just hear poetry in their mind. Like, it's just who they are. They're just
a fucking
poet.
But for that whole,
can I curse?
We have an explicit license.
Can't believe that's the first F-bomb I dropped. I've been talking for a while.
No, but I think that's one of the great things. I think most poets we know that, but I think there's a lot of people who come out of MFA programs and they feel like, oh, I'm never going to make it in this world of academic poetry, and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's a nice thing that they can, I think some people see, can see that at the New Orleans Poetry Festival and be like, oh yeah, look, you don't have to be part of this world to have your poetry out there in the world. Mm-hmm. Somewhere. There's other places.
Yeah. You know, one of the most popular panels, one of the highest reviewed panels at the festival was early Friday morning, the first morning. And so it's really surprising that it got this really high rating, but it was called Your Day Job. Mark Statman proposed it. And, it was about what poets do for a living, and it was really, really popular. A lot of people came to that and liked it, you know, and liked hearing, you know, from, I think it was five poets on the panel, only one of whom worked in academia, and the rest of them, you know, all do other things.
Hustling. Yeah, yeah. Hustlers.
Mm-hmm.
So, one other thing I wanted to ask y'all, if we have listeners out there, this is, might be the first time they're hearing about New Orleans Poetry Festival, hopefully.
NOLAPoetry.com?
Yeah, well, we're going to put that link up there for sure, but hopefully they just will come to attend the festival, but maybe some of them have ideas about out there of something they could propose as a proposal for next year's, mm-hmm. 2018. What kind of things are y'all looking for? What kind of things would be good?
So one of the things Bill and I were talking about for next year's, so normally the last 2 years we just open proposals and you go on our website and you submit your idea for proposal, the people that you want on it. And this is a very conference-based, you know, yeah, way of doing it. So you get together your people, you propose your idea, and then you, you know, talk about what your little hour is going to be about. And one of the things we were thinking about doing next year was focusing a little bit more on actually looking for very specific things, because yeah, people wanted to, people wanted more, you know, more panels on race and political poetry and just certain things that came up where, you know, we're kind of tossing around right now this idea of, you know, how can we actually like solicit and get some of those things rolling in people's minds. But other than that, yeah, we're open to proposals as well of anything, and people can propose anything.
One totally new aspect that I'm pretty sure we're going to add is a visual poetry submissions.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cool.
There's lots of wall space around
the healing center
to hang the stuff. And so we're gonna do some kind of submission process for that. Yeah.
Visual poets.
Well, thank you all for talking to us about this today. And, We're going to take you listeners for a moment out to some other recordings we did at the New Orleans Poetry Festival from here.
We're here at New Orleans Poetry Fest doing recordings. This is just our first recording of the day. We're here with Lisa Donovan, who is going to read a poem from her book out on Trembling Pillow Press, Red of Split Water.
Let me tell you of the dream. The clouds are quick puffs of gray against a darker sky. It is the weather, but in reverse. Their movement, a slow high pitch ringing. Metal flips on metal. They move, and you move with them. Your eyes nowhere. Not capturing, they sink. The sky gathers shadow and shifts in tandem. A sister heavy on the hills. A ravine hidden by brush. Line of sun curves at the shore. Over there is distance, and you name it distance. At the center, a structure gives no light, is at the heart of things, overtaken by vines, grasses that don't quite touch. A steel plow is a remnant, its work seen as lines through land, like a comb through two thin hair. There's a hill or moon collapsed into some earth over there. This land pressed into itself is your body laid down. This line of hills, your clavicle, your pelvis, knees. This place not extracted is how you lend yourself to be. And maybe you ache from the weight, and aching realize there's no space for waking. And willing yourself to wake, and so doing, begin.
Question. I'm really curious.
Mm-hmm.
So Lisa's here because she's poetry. But What, did you just want to come to hang out in New Orleans?
I wanted to come down and support her. Yeah. Because it's wonderful that she was able to take a story that's quite authentic and very personable and of an emerging genre and just to come down and just show support. Mm-hmm.
And it's New Orleans, right? So it's like,
yeah. And you lived here for a number of years.
You did.
So it was great to come down and actually see some of the environments that she was existing in.
When?
2003, 4, and 5.
Okay, so right before the madness.
Yeah.
So you got out like when did you leave in 2005? Like Katrina.
Week after Katrina.
Really?
Oh wow.
Wow. Okay. So the exodus. Okay. So
it's, yeah. But
you've been back since or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have good friends.
Okay, good. So you maintain ties to the city.
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, so how's poetry like architecture? I'm just kidding. So you're working architecture, but what?
I was thinking about that, and one of the snippets that Lisa came up with, she did this small editorial dedicated to a cathedral, and a cathedral in as shadow in the open sky, and I think it was something related to a correlation between poetry and architecture. And one of the things that she did explain to me that was really great to hear is that how she creates her work is very architectural, starting with the foundation and building it up. And that was something that I thought was really great. And also, while she was reading earlier, she was reading a bit out of her book, I started thinking about looking at forms as in not seeing the form in front of you, but seeing that which it takes away. So I guess like in Japan, they talk about how you look at the shadow portion of an image or the negative aspect of an image, or the negative space. And so I like to think of what she just wrote. I try to listen to it in a manner that is very much like the negative space. And I see that in architecture continually. And I use that in conversations with clients when, specifically in Los Angeles, where the buildings, especially the large buildings that I work on, they tend to be somewhat googly and sketchy and just kind of these big blocks with multiple spaces inside of them. And the thing that I've tried to explain to them is that think about it as negative space. You know, let's utilize the light that we have as a luxury. And in Los Angeles, there's so much sunlight. So if we can utilize the shadow and come up with perforated screens, for example, and cast those on these bulbous or just boxy looking things, it'll actually create something inventive and something interesting. But it is that negative space. It's trying to punch holes, you know, in what you see in front of you. So I like to think of that as whatever design you come up with, you can be completely inventive about it. And it's poetry in and of itself, I guess, you know. So when she was reading that, I was trying to think about how I might explain and how it correlates to what I do. And that's one of the things that I've actually had conversations with clients, is that utilizing negative space, see it as that. And so far, some of the buildings that we've done quite a few apartment buildings, multifamily, luxury, and perforated screens, again, for example, they've just been the way to go. And the other way is at night, how people will interact with the building as they pass by at night. So you can use the lighting and just come up with different variations of light. And there's an expanse of examples and ways of actually illuminating a building that actually make it look different and interesting and poetic. Yes. Yeah.
Great. No, that was fantastic.
Yeah. No, that's good. I like
it. You ever heard architects be like, okay, so this is like a free verse park over here. I feel like architecture is such an open field.
It is.
That to use poetic terminology to explain a form is not out of the question.
No, not at all. That's the wonderful thing, is that poetry comes from language and human thought, and it's one of the basis of a great many different things, because if we set out to do anything, it's going to be coming from a basis of language and thought. An architecture is just creating a structure that somebody can interact with. So when you discuss the sound in this room, you know, whether or not it's going to be great or not, well, maybe we can add a blanket, you know, you're just thinking architecturally. And the effect that that blanket would have is the creative sound you get to use in this. And it can sound great, or it can sound different, it can sound your own. Something poetic, I guess. But yeah, architecture is a basis of a great many different things.
I don't think there's many other fields where you're expected to explain what you're doing so much as architecture, right?
Mm, yeah. There's an expectation in architecture that you'll know a lot about a lot of different things, but I think that's probably the same thing that people might expect from poets, is that you'll know a great many different things about a great many different writers.
Well, people don't expect you to like write explaining your poetry. I feel like architects end up doing that a lot, like writing things, explaining why they made the choices that they made.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's definitely expectations of explaining everything. Right? Yeah, and it has to be explained within reality, you know, the real world. But then there's that tendency to, in architecture, for the architect or designer to go off a little too conceptual, and then you lose interest from. Where well, it's really trying to make it a reality.
I think that happens in poetry too.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'd like to see like a super conceptual architectural treatise be delivered at a slam poetry event. You know, like it could kill, you know?
Yes.
It'd be good.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for coming up and reporting. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool. Awesome.
So I'm here today with Wawa at the New Orleans Poetry Fest, and she's going to read some poetry for us today. Do you want to tell the audience a little bit about your poetry?
Yeah. Hello, my name is Meiwa Lo, but I publish under Wawa. I'm a poet from Hong Kong. I just moved to Hawaii last year, and I came here to the New Orleans Poetry Festival with Tinfish Press. I brought the book I published with them, Pepe the Monkey King, with me here. But I'm going to read from some of the work from the most recent manuscript that I finished in the Vermont Writer's Residency last month, with me to share with you all here. I sometimes write about, mostly I write about the political situation in Hong Kong, but somewhat it got really heavy as I moved away from it. And now I'm entering a new realm of poetry to bring it into the experience, because I come from a music background. So I'm now taking off with my poetry into the art world. So this is, I'm going to read from Anna and Anna, which is the manuscript that I just mentioned. So it's a book, it's 20 poems written on 20 photographs, and these 20 photographs were translated by me into text. So half of the page is a drawing, which I expect to be seen like a painting. But now I'm going to read them because they're still text, and then I'll read a poem. Written on that photograph accordingly, and it will be around 8 to 9 of them. So here we go. Drawing number 1, after image, an island, pound EDC 9AF, desert sand sky, pound EDC 9AF, desert sand fog, mistaken other world, foggy imprisonment, violet heat, rosy low pressure, pink water, pink woods, humming, seeing by force, watching by force, forced being here. Standing in the river, the water began to be heard, but the rain fell, the ripples spoke, recurrence of names, carving through water, palm lines deepened, still standing and absent, vomiting mountains. Drawing number 6. White morning, high trees looming through thick fog, winter light, 1, 2, 3, 5. Eyes open, embargo, a wakeful dream. As the dream ends, the sky lingers on my face. I thought I was born again, wondered where to start looking. As the dream ends, a dead fly is wrapped in my feast. I thought I was lost again, wondered where to turn around. A person falls out from my face, running away. Drawing 109. Wakeful fog, white, falling as rain. Bald trees, black, embargo, standing hysterically, staring past tragedy. A dream falls and hits the forest. The trees burn. Many hers are injured, running for their lives. She looms from the depths of a fog, walking to the accident. Drawing 102. Obsessed overcast, cocooning mode, inked cocoons, layered cocoons, grade 38, falling, leaking, grade 20, eyes falling. Grade 26, 48, grade 45, black, grade 33 to 59, pound 545454 to pound 969696. Black mounts to invisibility. One black tree excessively. One road to no place, suffered. Way for ceasing, for discontinuing. I wake up on the road under thick, moldy fog. Staring until a thing might fall. I'm almost dead when it finally comes through the fog. How delighted I am when stones fall on my face. I'm yours now. Drawing 103. Beginning blackness. Rain of sorrows. Accidental wings. Exhales. Mountainous mist. Misted black remains. Misted black places. One burnt tree alive, bearing the sun. Ripped mountain, emptied silhouette. Coincidence, almost wrong. She left her ankles tied to the seafloor, swimming up for a way out. A blue mountain, as wide as the sky, will finish her alive. When there is no distance ahead, she'll do a handstand, carry on in the sky. Drawing 108. To cube an encounter diagonally. A setting sun of weight, bald tree, right to its slope, round to its sky. Between the sky, gray 55 pound 8C8C8C, and black pound 000000. A triangular possibility. Burned hand crawling out of a triangle. The smiling monk is rowing down a creek in the charred forest. She is running up between the skeletons of trees in the charred forest. When a meteor changes course, 100 light years above them, they see each other and lose interest at first sight. He abandons his boat, and she carries on. It's the last one. Drawing 107. Grade 30 to 39. Raining clouds. Pound 40, 40, 40 to pound 63, 63, 63. Approaching the edge of sky. Curtaining the stage. Stage on the ocean. Grade 28. Count 474747, rippling emptiness, explosion in silence, to perfect indifference. She was born on an empty train to the ocean. Houses pass by, fields pass by, rain passes by, no one boards, the train has no stops. In the center of the ocean, she jumps off. As one's women. Thank you.
Thank you. That was great. Do you want to talk about your poem a little bit, or would you rather just leave it?
I could talk a little about Anna because I was a very messy poet, so I always forget what I have written, and this manuscript has been in my desktop for 2 years. It was a gift for a friend before I left Hong Kong, and that friend, we were both living on an outlying island in Hong Kong, and she is a photographer, so I used her photographs to do the first half of Anna, which is 10 photographs and 10 poems. And then last year, December, a curator in Hong Kong asked if I have a poem to be part of her project, which was an art book, which was a collaboration of different forms of art, including book design, a book binder, an artist, which was called Sojourn with Strangers. So that art book was exhibited in a gallery in Hong Kong called Munamat, and then was further exhibited in Art Basel, Hong Kong, this year, in April. And then now collected by a collector in Hong Kong. And so I didn't really mean to. I was just so messy, and I didn't really plan to work on it until the curator told me that one audience asked, when will the manuscript be published? And then I suddenly thought that, oh, someone in the world wanted to read it. And so I then worked on it and finally finished it. And for this anonymous reader. So that's so the second half of Anna was written by the photographs taken by myself on the Big Island, Hawaii. So these are two islands that I move back and forth, like a timelessness between past and future. I'm now in Hawaii, and those are my favorite islands, and that's kind of the story behind this manuscript. And I really love it. It's the kind of beauty of women that I love. I guess it might have some Asian aesthetic in it that's like a little weak, a little reserved, and that kind of stillness that I like. So that's it.
I really like, I've never seen anyone use the hex codes for the colors in there like that. What were you trying to get across with the hex codes for the colors?
That's cool. I first tried to present this manuscript in Vermont when I was there with visual artists and poets and writers there, and they asked the same question because I used to play with color codes with my friend when I was younger, and we loved the precision and universal language of it, and the idea of translating images came as an accident. Everything in my life was like accidents, and I was just thinking it's the visual goes really like a roller coaster. If I lay them out, it's kind of like visual poem, and it's also like maybe some kind of copyright problems that it's like so it's a little complicated for me. So I just one day suddenly realized, oh, why not translating them? And so to look at the photo and the colors, it's really hard. And this kind of translation is not from a language to another language, kind of like a linguistic language to another linguistic language. It's really fun to dig into it, and it's endless to keep digging into it. I still feel that it's not quite adequate and not quite accurate, and I cannot really translate the colors and stuff really objectively, so otherwise it would be very boring, like sky, sun, and so on. So I added my own perspective to it. And it all came from my background and working in an art gallery, because I always stared at the walls and all the work, and I was just imagining how would poems be experienced that way, and you would be forced to look at it instead of me reading it out loud for you. So what would it be if seen instead of read? That kind of thing just always occurs in my mind. So and that's the color part is the most tricky part to borrow over, because I couldn't describe it, and you know, pink, red.
Well, yeah, I think the English language is pretty limited in your vocabulary for colors. So you either have to use objects that are those colors to try and approach it that way. Exactly. Or find something else. So that's great to use the hex code. So you can avoid that whole problem and just give.
Exactly. And that experience of translating a feeling, an atmosphere, instead of the objects inside the image. I still find that there's room for more accuracy and so on and precision. But that's why I am starting in this direction now with and I hope I would do better next time. The more exciting stuff.
No, that's great. The other thing I thought, we're in an auditory medium here, so the listeners can't see the way you have your poems laid out on the page here, that there's some sections seem to be more in traditional stanzas, but then you have some where there's white space and they're kind of...
Right, that's right.
Kind of spread across the page in some sort of cloud fashion or something. I don't know.
That's great. Thanks for asking. I forgot to mention this because I'm still figuring out how to best present this, because during the residency, I tried to experiment by joining the artist's presentation so that I have a screen and I could, so the first half that has white spaces and so on, because they are really translated from an image. So these are the words that can be matched on the photographs in that position.
Okay.
So the sky is there, the island is there, there is a tree there. So it is meant really to be an image. But
so it's
just
representational of the images, exactly. Okay,
yes,
nice.
Yes. So I'm still figuring out how to do it. Like I imagine them being on canvases, because it's an image, but they're just text. So it's a text image, and they're really representing entirely the position and everything, the location of the stuff, the objects inside the photographs, in their positions. So I imagine how would that be seen. So during the presentation, I asked the audience to look at it on the screen, and I wouldn't do the reading until our eyes were done with the looking part, then I'll read the poem accordingly. So the first half, with a lot of images, island, fog, and so on.
So you would show the photograph and then read?
I didn't show the photograph.
No, you didn't show it.
Yeah, just the text.
Just the text, the image of the text.
Yes.
And then read it, okay.
Yes.
But did you show the photographs afterwards, or
no.
Was just, no?
Yeah, if people are interested, I can show, but it would be I think this is what I want.
But you were basing it on specific photographs.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So now I'm working in this direction of just keep taking photographs of my life, and then I translate them and see how it works, and more different kinds of more art installation minded way of writing poems. Yeah, I try to work with a limited writer studio and during the residency, so I only have a window and a desk, so I actually wrote down the windows and
you know I don't know, I'm just thinking about it. I love that idea. I wonder if there's some way you could make it interactive where it would be kind of funny if you showed the text in some way and read the poem and then had people try to draw what they thought the picture looked like and then show them the image. That might be kind of an interesting thing to
see.
Yeah,
I have many, many ideas of how to execute these ideas in my mind, and I got many advices from the visual artists there. Because I worked in an art gallery, I have some ideas. I don't have a background in MFA in art and so on, but I was just imagining a projector projecting text on a big wall and to be totally immersed in that world of a painting, but in a text painting or with drawing, and then maybe with me reading it in the background. I don't know. That sounds or just colors on the wall, and then my reading it or different kinds of
But I kind of like the idea of getting the audience to feed it back to you in some way. That could be cool, and then that could be a whole show in itself. You could have the
poem on one side and then people's interpretations of what they thought the image would look like based on the poem. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking about. I just made up the word, maybe it's called experiential poetry. That, like, it's poetry in the experience but not on the page, because this is where my sense of poetry came from, because I came from a singing background, so I used all my body to really utter, sing the words out, and in the air, in the sky, towards the sky, towards everything. So I'd like to bring that into poetry.
Well, that is great. Thank you for sharing your poetry with us today.
Thank you.